Hello, you're listening to Germantown Community Radio, WRLGLP, at 92.9 FM in Northwest Philadelphia. Welcome to Vanessa's Money Hour, where I profile people, programs, resources, and strategies supporting financial security and wealth building. I'm your host, Vanessa Lowe. This show airs every Saturday and Thursday from 1 to 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. I welcome your questions, guest suggestions, and feedback. Email those to Vanessa at gtownradio.com. Today, I'm so excited. We're going to talk about the FIRE movement, financial independence, retire early. And I've got two wonderful guests, so let's jump right in.
All right. Let me go ahead right in and say, so Deanna, are you with us? Please say hello to the G-Town audience.
Hello, everyone. Great to be here.
Thank you for coming. And Nasima, please say hello.
Hello, I am honored to be a part of this G-Town crew.
Great. All right, very excited today to have this conversation. It's both about a conference and a movement. And I am appreciative of both my guests because this is the first time we're talking about this on Vanessa's Money Hour. And I hope it's just the beginning of maybe perhaps an annual conversation. One of the things I've been saying to all my friends is like, I'm so hungry for conferences. So when I saw the Econome conference list, it's like, I think I want to go. I don't know what it's going to be, but I want to go. I follow the money nerd conferences. So let's jump right in. Diana, right up front, let's please briefly describe the FIRE movement. Tell us what the acronym stands for and tell us what are some of the key components?
Sure. So the FIRE movement, FIRE stands for Financial Independence, Retire Early. And it's essentially a lifestyle movement with the goal of financial freedom. I think one of the things that really defines the FIRE movement is a level of aggression and the people that pursue financial independence. And also the focus on the option of retiring early, which financial independence gives you that option, right? That's what we're all striving for in traditional retirement. I think that the FIRE movement, when I say that it's aggressive, one of the key differentiators is if you think about a typical financial advisor is going to tell you to save maybe 10 to 20% of your income for retirement. A lot of people in the FIRE movement really try to increase that savings rate as much as possible. So they could be saving 50%, 60%, 75%. So you're really just reaching financial independence faster based on your savings rate. It doesn't have to do with any kind of magic button investing or any kind of get rich quick scheme. It's essentially just that savings rate is a lot higher than what people typically save and invest.
Got it. Thank you. All right. So we've got the acronym, Financial Independence and Retire Early. Great. Now, before we go to Nasima, let me make sure that we get the specifics at least for the conference. So the Econome conference, tell us when, where, and will it really be aware?
Yes. So the Econome Conference is happening this November 13th and 14th at the University of Cincinnati. And it is an in-person event, which I know in these times of COVID, it's like planning an in-person event is quite the endeavor, right? And so what I've done is I prefer not to have a virtual option. Reason being is because all of the main stage speakers, I have great videos that I post on my YouTube channel for free. So if you are only interested in seeing the main stage speakers, I got you. You don't need to pay for that. I'll give that to you for free. You go to my YouTube channel and check it out. Really, the Econome Conference is about inspiration and community. That's why you buy a ticket, because you want to feel the magic in that room. Last year was our first event and someone had described it as a party about money, which is exactly the vibe that I was going for the Econome Conference. And Nasima was there, so she can tell you that I'm not lying here. So yes, the Economy Conference is basically about community. It's about inspiration. We have main stage speakers to teach you various aspects of financial independence, whether it's really tactical things like how do you get out of student loan debt, or what do you do when you get a big medical bill, or what's up with travel hacking? How is that a strategy that you can use to save money? To more inspirational things, people sharing their stories about how they're actually retiring early and reaching financial independence. So there's great main stage speakers. And then we also have breakout sessions. So not only are you learning from the people on stage, but you're also able to learn from the people in the room, because really this is a conference for money nerds that are looking to, you know, fuel their fire, as I like to say.
Exactly. Exactly. Yes. No, I went to FinCon for the first time, I think it was probably 2 years ago. And when I came back, I was like, it was a money nerds conference. Yeah. It was,
oh yeah.
Yeah. So Nasima, let's make sure that we get to hear a little bit from you as we start. So let me give you a moment, and we'll, I didn't really give Diana the opportunity to, but please introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about your background, and then move into what you'll be presenting at the conference.
Well, hey, I'm Nasima. I am a labor and delivery nurse by profession, mom of two girls, and I kind of accidentally stumbled upon the FIRE movement when I was kind of at the end of my journey of paying off debt. And it just spoke to me, because along my debt payoff journey, I realized the power that taking control of your money had. And it made me aware of the fact that I was in more control of my life than I could have ever imagined. And this world of FIRE just made all these possibilities, like it just opened up a world of possibilities to me. And so I was just down from the time that I heard about it. I was just like, yep, this is the movement for me. This is where I need to be, because I just feel like life is too short and I want to live it how I want to live it. I don't want to spend years upon years upon years working for somebody else that doesn't even value my work, doesn't even value me as a person, and that I'm just a number. And so it just put me in this position of power to take control of my life and my finances, and to be able to show my kids what's possible for them as well.
Very exciting. Very exciting. So you have, that's the thing at FinCon, it was podcasters, bloggers, and what was the other platform, sort of all social media folks. So a platform that's very, very specific. And I remember one of the things at that FinCon conference, they talked about be as close of a niche as you can, like really hone in. So tell us what your niche is. And it sounds like it's related to your career.
Definitely. So like I said, I'm a nurse, and just learning about the tenets of the FIRE movement, I realized that nursing is really like an ultimate hack to FIRE, because there's so much upside potential as far as earning. There is so many things that you can optimize as far as like semi-retirements, or, you know, taking breaks here or there, kind of designing your career how you want to, just because it's just so many opportunities within the field. And so my focus is, of course, introducing nurses to FIRE and introducing them to other nurses that have achieved FIRE or on the path to FIRE, or have alternative working and lifestyles that can inspire them. So I started off just with a general platform, sharing my story about paying off debt. And that platform is called Financially Intentional. And then when I wanted to start a podcast, I wanted to speak specifically to nurses, because I feel like there's no shortage of personal finance podcasts. I really wanted to niche down, as they would say, and talk specifically to my people and make sure that we knew the cheat code and what was possible for us. And so I started the podcast Nurses on FIRE.
Love it. I love it. And so they can get it on just their iPhones, iPod, what do you call it?
Anywhere you can find podcasts.
Nurses on FIRE. All right. I love it. check that out. And so is that what you'll be presenting at the conference? Give us a little bit of a tidbit of
you know what's very interesting is that we have not specifically nailed down my topic. So this will be a little bit of a surprise for your audience if they decide to attend. We have not. And I've been thinking about this for a long time.
But I will say one of the most amazing things about Nasima is that she did pay off $1 million of debt. And that is a story that needs to be told. So I'm pushing for that topic.
Well, that's
yes, amazing. We can definitely talk about that.
Yeah. Okay. So that's $1 million. Wow. That's amazing. I've been patting myself on the back because I paid off, I had at its height, $75,000 of, pretty much graduate school debt. And, I vowed to pay it off in 10 years from graduation. And I did, but I can't imagine $1 million. So congratulations to you.
Thank you. Thank you. And we have to say that it includes a house in Northern California. So
okay. There you go. There you go. Yep. 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 It's all
just
relative,
to give you some
right?
context. It is all relative.
All relative.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. So, all right, let's go back to Diana. Tell us a little bit about your backstory. You're sponsoring this conference. You also have a platform. So how did you stumble into the FIRE movement?
Yeah, so I found it in the fall of 2015 through this blog called Mr. Money Mustache, which sounds kind of silly to anyone not familiar with the FIRE movement, but he's actually one of the most popular bloggers in the FIRE movement. And I think what really attracted me to it is I was 30 grand in debt in my late 20s, living in New York City. And at the time the 30th birthday was looming. I think 30 is one of those really reflective birthdays where you're like, what am I doing with my life? And so I recognized that I had this debt, even though I was, climbing the ladder in my career, I was checking all of these boxes on things that I wanted to achieve. And yet I never really learned the money management skills that were going to help me build wealth. And so, I decide I want to get out of this debt. I'm reading about money. And a lot of the content I was coming across really talked about this sense of struggle. You know, it's going to be hard to reduce your expenses. It's going to be hard to get out of debt. And what really attracted me to the FIRE movement is this kind of attitude of positivity and that this is possible. And seeing that other people are doing it really kind of inspired me to want to do it for myself. So I like to say finding the blog Mr. Money Mustache was like a refreshing punch in the face because I just never heard anyone talk about money this way. And it helped me realize that if I don't know how to manage $1,000, then I don't know how to manage $1 million. You know, I used to think that my problem was income. I used to think if I could only make more money, that's going to solve all of my issues. But really my problem was money management. And so by learning that and realizing that, it's not a real hardship for me to cook all of my meals and, to not buy clothes for a year that it took me to get out of that debt. It was really empowering and helped me realize just how many options I had if I could get myself financially secure. So I was able to get out of 30 grand of debt in 11 months. And from there, I started saving about 60% of my income. And that led to a lot of other changes in my life, which ultimately led me to fund my own business, which is the Economy Conference.
There you go. And congratulations on the first year and now going into the second year. I think you told me that the first year was literally like a couple of weeks before we went under.
1 week. It was on March 7th. I really feel like I dodged a bullet on that one. Yeah. I mean, I could have never anticipated that a pandemic would be a challenge in starting an events-based business. But yes, we had it 1 week before everything shut down. So got very lucky.
There you go. Tell folks how they can find out more. Give us the website where they can go and check it out and register.
Sure. It's economyconference.com. And that's economy with an M-E, not a M-Y, a little play on words there. So yes, economyconference.com. You can check out the schedule. You can read about all the speakers and see all the programming. Also, you can go to the YouTube channel. Just look for Economy Conference and you'll get to see all the speeches from last year and kind of get an idea of what we're all about.
Great, great. Yes. And I both listened to your live webinar and then I went to the site. And I was happy with what I saw. So one of the big issues and thank you for, we talked about me bringing this up. There's been some concern that the FIRE movement is, just for white high income tech workers. And in some ways it might be, they fit in that ability to, make a lot of money real fast and retire easier than somebody who works for a Walmart. So just generally, if each of you could speak to your experience of the movement and the sort of race and class issues that come up and the diversity of the movement, because I look forward to going to conferences, but I want to find people who I have something in common with and who have that sensitivity as somebody who works a lot in sort of economic justice and really trying to, raise awareness around how imbalanced, our starting places are, for many people, particularly African Americans and Native Americans. So, Nasima, let's start with you.
Well, I'd like to think that I am the polar opposite of a white man in tech. I'm a Black woman in nursing, and nursing is the largest medical profession and quite vast in income ranges. I do have the fortune of working as a nurse in the San Francisco Bay Area, which has the highest salaries in the country, if not in the world. So I do come from a little bit of a place like that's a little skewed as far as income. But like we talked about earlier, it's all relative when the cost of living here, the poverty level for a family of four is over $100,000. So it's, so it's a little different. Yes, we get paid a lot, but our expenses are really high. I think you have to look at it like that, but also, the reason why I say that I'm a part of the FIRE movement is because I think representation matters and people need to know that it's super accessible for them. They also need to know that I'm just a Black girl from West Oakland that grew up in the hood that, didn't have money figured out, even though I did all the things that I was supposed to do. I was always told to go to college by any means necessary, which landed me in $200,000 in student loan debt. I was told to get the best job out there. And I worked in healthcare administration and hated it and then had to go back to school for nursing. And so I make as much as a nurse with just an associate degree. But I have two master's degrees. And so I that's why I, share my stories and I share my story and other people's stories on my podcast so people know what's possible for them. And I think that that's what's super important because yes, the stories that you'll hear out there, like the Mr. Money Mustaches and other people like that, they are representative of what you would think, of as the FIRE movement, but there's also me. There's also Jamila Souffrant. There's also Rich and Regular. There's also Our Rich Journey. Like these are just a couple of examples of people who represent another place on the race and color, income, and just cultural spectrum that there are examples from. And I like to tell people, that your network is your net worth, but your network can be your social media network. And so I like to tell people, okay, this FIRE movement, it doesn't seem like you have a place. Really, you do. You just have to do a little bit of searching and surround yourself with those people who can you can relate to, because again, representation matters, and you have to feel a part of your story in those stories in order to make it possible for you. And so just use all your social media resources instead of scrolling and, through gossip columns, follow these people that look like you that are doing the things that you aspire to. And there are plenty of examples across the spectrum of people that you can follow, not just people that look like those people that are typically represented by the FIRE movement.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thanks for that. Yeah. And those are great suggestions. I've been, sometimes when I haven't got a full schedule for my show, I'll go and I'll search, and I found a wonderful article that was like, you know, here are the top 10 Black podcasters, and found some really, really wonderful shows. And, you know, like, I have some issues with sort of like the social media and the tech, but I think podcasting has really allowed everybody, you know, to sort of put something out there. And so now we're seeing people who had this skill and this talent, and now they're able to share it. And, you know, and now we have these articles that can really help bubble them up. So thanks for that. Diana, what's been your experience?
And
I'm appreciative that when I went to your site, I saw some people of color who had been presenters even at your first conference.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think it's understandable that there's this perception that it's only for white males in tech, because that's who's getting the most attention in like the bloggers, or those were the most popular initial bloggers in the movement. But while I don't think FIRE is a solution for systemic poverty, for instance, I also think that it's a lot more accessible than people think, right? There's a spectrum. It's like systemic poverty and then like the six-figure salary. There's a whole spectrum in between there. And I think a lot of us aren't as disadvantaged as we think, right? So I'll tell you this. The most popular speech from Economy last year was from Jackie Cummings Kosky. She's a Black woman that found FIRE at 38. She was newly divorced, single Black woman, never made six figures, and she reached financial independence in 10 years. You know, she actually, her speech was revealing the real numbers behind how she was able to do it. And she opens up the books. I mean, she gets real vulnerable. She tells you about her background, which is, you know, where she came from, and the fact that she was able to get to where she is today is a really incredible, inspiring story. Two other speakers, Lynn Frere, who is a good friend of Nisima and I as well. She lost everything in her late 20s due to a brain tumor. She had to completely start over financially due to this health issue. And she never, you know, surpassed six figures as well, and was able to reach financial independence before 40. Another speaker, Jillian Johnsrud, again, lower salary, six kids, still figured it out. So it is possible. It's not easy, right? It is easier to increase the gap between your income and your expenses when you're higher income. But just even if you're lower income, it may be a little bit more difficult, but it's not impossible.
There you go. Thanks for that. And that's what's wonderful about the conferences, right? And you know, I think that one of the first ones that I looked at was, what's her name, Jackie, the woman who shared all her numbers? Did you say her name was Jackie? Yeah. So what I loved about that is that she did share the numbers.
You know,
her presentation was, and here was my income, here are the individual line items, you know, and she really talked about one of the things that I really try to sort of really, you know, beg people, make sure you're participating in your employee benefits program. I think she separated from her husband and realized that her husband had so much more, even though she thought they were kind of saving the same way. It's like, no, she had been missing out on some of the benefits that she could have taken. So getting into those types of specifics, I think is really going to help to bring more people into the movement, because I think a good way to promote the movement is we'll learn together, right? That's why we come to the conferences. That's why we want a community, because, you know, retirement is very different than my parents had, you know, good city and government jobs for years, and they had great pensions. You know, that doesn't exist anymore. And so we got to figure out, well, what are the new ways? What are the current ways and the most accessible ways for people to really, really start saving and save aggressively, like you said, so that they have more options as they get older. So thanks for that. There's a specific but simple calculation for FIRE. Diana, what is that?
Yes. So what we're all striving for, whether we're retiring early or retiring at traditional retirement age, we want 25 times our yearly expenses. And so what I love about that number and that formula is it actually really forces you to get very intimately involved in your numbers. You got to know your expenses. And you also have to be able to make some assumptions about what your expenses will be, right? And so that takes years to kind of, I mean, I track every single dollar I spend. I really know where my money is going, and I'm able to have more agency on directing those dollars as well. So the formula is 25 times your yearly expenses. And the reason why it's 25 times is because it's based on this idea of a safe withdrawal rate in retirement, which is known as the 4% rule. If you have 25 times your yearly expenses, you should be able to withdraw 4% each year and never run out of money. It's based on something called the Trinity study. And that's really kind of the model of what we're all striving for. Now, some people like to pad that number. Some people like to, you know, not fully retire. Maybe they semi-retire and they draw down maybe half as much to kind of cover their bases. So there's a lot of different ways to go about it. The 25 times and 4% rule is really just a general rule of thumb that we use for modeling.
Okay. So we've got a lot more time. So I'd like to get into some of the other specifics of things that are often covered and talked about in the FIRE movement. You gave generally about, you know, reduce your expenses and, you know, try to increase your income. But when I looked at the site, I think sort of one of the first things was this make a plan. Somebody talk about that. So what does that mean? And what are the strategies to go about that?
I think making a plan is just about like knowing your numbers and what are the courses of action you're going to take to increase your savings rate. And I think like you'll hear savings rate come up a lot in the FIRE movement, but it's again, just the amount of your take home pay that you're able to spend either paying down debt, saving or investing. That's an easy way to look at it. But a lot of times people just don't know what's coming in and what's going out. And just that simple awareness is golden. Like once you are aware of your numbers, now you can actually do something about it. And so I think a lot of the planning is around that because you think it would be a simple notion to know that, but I don't know why we're programmed in this society to not look at our money, but we just don't. And so I think like at a basic level, the planning component is that like you just have to understand where you are so you know how to get to where you want to go. And so, I mean, it's really just that simple.
Throw that word out there that I know people hate, budget, right? I mean, for me, it's the core. I've got to have a budget. If it feels better for folks, call it a spending plan, but it's essentially a written record, right? And I think that's the difference. And that may be some of the challenge that particularly young folks have today. You can pull up Mint on your phone. And, you know, I just had a friend say the other night, well, I got money in my account, so I'm good, right? So I'm like, that's this point in time. And what that says to me is maybe you don't always have money in that account. And so this sort of plan is really at least a written budget. For me, go ahead, Dan.
Absolutely. People hate the word budgeting because I think what they hear is restriction. And they hear like, oh, I can't spend money on X, Y, and Z because I'm trying to adhere to a budget. The way I see it, there's a great quote, and I wish I remember who said it, but a budget is simply telling your money where to go versus wondering where it went. It's that simple. It's really very much about awareness, like Nasima said. And I am very big on tracking all of my expenses because that helps me budget realistically, right? So people will come up with a budget and they'll say, I should only be spending $200 a month on food. But they don't realize that last month they spent $500 on food. How realistic is that to go from one month to the next and cut it in more than half? That's not very realistic budgeting. So when you're tracking and you know exactly where all of your money is going without judgment, right? Especially when you're first starting out, this isn't about judging and feeling bad about it. This is just about building awareness so that you can actually engage with a budget that works.
Right. One of the things I do with the budget that I've designed is it incorporates the savings. So it has this sort of like component of dreaming, right? So it's like, yes, we know we've got to track, you know, okay, here's what's coming in. Here's what I've got to pay so that I keep the lights on and I keep a house. But then, you know, hopefully, you know, if we have some extra, or if we have to create some extra, which sometimes we do, we have to find that extra, then that's where you can start really saving for those goals and be specific about those goals is what I say. Because just saving to save, you know, beyond your emergency account is in and of itself important, but, you know, put down that you want to buy a house in 5 years or 10 years or 20 years. So it's, I've tried to find ways of turning a budget into a real sort of like vision board, you know, let's think of it as like our vision board for the future.
I actually love that. I love that idea of having a budget as a vision board. And I just wanted to add like their component of like saving and being very specific. I think that's super important. And I used to think I budgeted because I tracked my transactions on Mint. Not a budget. A budget is really having a plan in advance for all of your money. And when it comes to savings and investing and debt reduction goals, I say like prioritize those. And that's what a lot of people don't do. They kind of wait until they see what they have left over to meet those goals, as opposed to saying like, look, if I want to buy this house in 10 years and I know that I'm going to have to save X, Y, and Z and adjust their budget around that. For me, that's inspiring. And that's actually the way that I was able to pay down my debt so fast, because before I was one of those people, I did not know where my money went. But when I started to prioritize, listen, I got to pay off these student loans. So I know that if I want to be debt free by my 36th birthday, and that was a goal back then, this is how much I'm going to have to pay every month. And it seemed crazy at the time, but because I wrote it down and I had the plan in place, it happened more often than not. And more times I actually exceeded that goal than not met it. So budgets are the bomb.
Yeah. And you have you're raising two kids. I mean, as a single woman with no kids, I can't imagine that. But that's very cool.
If you're just joining us, this is Vanessa's Money Hour on Germantown Community Radio, 92.9 FM, WRLGLP. And today we're talking about the FIRE movement, Financial Independence, Retire Early. Let's get back to it.
So for me also, the plan requires a net worth statement, because those two things kind of go together, right? It's sort of like the budget is what's coming in, what's going out, and then how can I allocate to these things I want in the future? But the net worth is the current picture. So let's go to you, Diana. Do you have a net worth statement, and how did you develop it? Do you use it?
Yeah, I actually have a really simple tool, personal capital. You put all of your, you know, your credit cards, your bank accounts, all your different accounts, you know, if you own a house, your mortgage on there, and it calculates your net worth. And then I'm able to track it. You know, each month I like to reconcile, my expenses for the month, and I calculate my savings rate, and then I'll check out personal capital and see how I'm doing in growing my net worth. Seeing those numbers climb, and especially like getting out of debt, is one of the most gratifying parts, I think, of any financial journey, because you're watching that debt go down and watch, you know, it's just, you throw money at it, you see it go down, and it's such an amazing sense of satisfaction to get it over with. And now you could take all that money and throw it at building your net worth and watching something like personal capital, where you're watching that number go up and up. And the really fun thing is when you start investing and you start seeing compound interest work in your favor, because when you're in debt, the compound interest is working against you. It's causing that purchase that you put on a credit card to be three times as much as you thought you'd pay for it 10 years later, whatever it is, right? Whereas when you're investing, compound interest is working in your favor. So you're able to watch your net worth grow with literally like not a lot of work on your end, right? Your money is working harder than you can. And I think that's what's really exciting about watching your net worth grow.
Absolutely. Yeah. And just because, you know, our audience is folks from all over and different levels of experience with money. So I just wanted to clarify what a net worth statement is. So your budget is the in, the out, the goals, those kind of things. But it's what's happening over, you know, sort of a typical month. We tend to budget month by month. What the net worth statement is, it says, what are all of your assets, things that you own That's your total assets. And then the things that you owe, you know, the credit card debt, the mortgage on your home, the balance on your car loan, those go on the bottom. When you take the total assets minus the total liabilities, that's what's called your net worth. And what's cool about it is, like she said, it's really great when you can get rid of some of those liability items and move that payment that you were making over to a savings category in the budget. You know, it's like, oh, good. Now I can really start putting more towards my emergency fund. In my workbook, I also have a tracker, kind of like what Personal Capital does. But I've been tracking changes in my net worth really since I got out of grad school, because I was like, I really got to get a handle on these 8 different loans totaling $75,000. And so I put it, I have a row for every quarter. So 4 times a year, I'm updating that. And it is so cool to look at how it's changed and to see the major things that happen. I'm 56, I'm older than you guys. So I've now lived through two pretty severe downturns in the market. One was very temporary that we just had as COVID hit, right? Went down, boom, back up. People have made, especially rich people, have made amazing money. But back in 2008, we were all hit, a lot of people were hit really badly. And one of the things that was really critical for me now firing, not as young as you guys, but at 56, is I stayed in the market. I stayed in the market and I kept saying, I'm buying on sale, because I knew I'm going to have to pull this money out until much later. And I was in the stock market and I was like, I got time to ride out this wave, even though it was a 5-year wave. So I just love looking at, and I've annotated, you know, that quarter where it was like, boom, down. But then 5 years later, because I had stayed in, net worth jumped significantly. So that kind of visual can be really, really powerful. And I think we don't get exposed to that enough in school at any age, even in college. I mean, I didn't get even the basic finance class. So I think that's one thing that I really wanna see more of. And one of the people who's really moving on that is, do either of you, cause you all are in this movement more than I am, Tiffany Alashe from Jersey. Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's worked, so she is the Budgetnista. Wonderful resources that she has actually made free online, I think, using Facebook, and said, you know, here's why it's important to budget, you know, and here's some tools for budgeting. I think she created a workbook. And her goal was to reach a certain number of, particularly women, but, you know, it's open to everybody. And she started reaching that, and because social media now, you can turn that into a platform, she can now demand, you know, a really high price tag. But I love that she has turned into an advocate and essentially a champion and a movement builder for incorporating financial education into the public school system. And so I know she's worked on a piece of legislation that got passed in New Jersey, and I think she's working on some other places. So that is good stuff. All right, so that's make a plan, budget, net worth statement. Save as much as you can. So is there an at least, like, let's hear from each of you, how did you approach that sort of, because it sounds like that may have been a big shift for both of you, saving differently than you had before you had the fire under your belt.
Yeah, I guess I'll go first. So the way that I figured out, I got myself to a 60% savings rate, and really getting out of debt, right, would enabled me to obviously increase my savings rate. And really what I did is I experimented with how much can I reduce my expenses in a way that doesn't feel like deprivation. It takes a lot of experimentation to do that. You know, at one point I was like making my own laundry detergent and face wash, right? Wow. That was like going a little too far. That was like a little bit too far for me, but I experimented with that, right? To like, see, is this going to be like not really a problem? Things like, you know, I cooked every single meal that I ate when I was getting out of debt. I didn't, you know, I had like $50 a week that I was spending on food in New York City. And I actually loved it, right? That was something that ended up being like a real creative endeavor for me to like fix my own food. And I would like host these elaborate dinner parties in my apartment. And even like without buying clothes. So I decided I wasn't going to buy clothes, but I would host these clothing exchanges where me and my friends would do these clothing swaps and we'd get all new clothes for free. That's a level of creativity and resourcefulness that I didn't even know I had, but I wouldn't have known that if I didn't experiment on like what level of reducing my expenses is still comfortable for me. And also the other way that I was able to do it is when my salary was increasing, I did not let lifestyle inflation creep in. So that just continued to go towards savings. And I kept the same level of lifestyle that I had when I was, you know, really reducing expenses. A lot of times when people get a raise, it's like, well, this means I can get a new car, or this means I can buy a bigger house. And they're kind of trapping themselves into a more expensive lifestyle that doesn't allow them to save as much.
Right. Yeah, definitely. Now, Seema, with two children, how old were your children when you got onto the FIRE movement?
So my oldest daughter actually was turning one, and that's actually what inspired me to kind of get out of debt. So this was about a couple of years before I got introduced to the FIRE movement, but that's what inspired my debt elimination journey. But she was about three when I got introduced to FIRE. And then my daughter came along, which is actually my second daughter came along a couple of years, well, about a year into it, but it was very interesting, the timing of her entry into the world, because when I found out I was pregnant, I had paid off all my debt and I was kind of just dipping my toe into this wealth accumulation phase now that I didn't have all this debt. But then I kind of had to put a pause on it because I was in a toxic work environment. And I decided that I was in a stable enough place financially that instead of working the 6 days a week that I worked, that I would actually relocate to another state actually and do some geo arbitrage and only work 6 days a month and still be able to live comfortably. And so I think like these are some of the options that are possible for you once you are exposed to this movement, because, you know, you can pump the brakes a little bit, and but you still know what the goal is. And again, it's about living life now as opposed to waiting and delaying. And I just like thank God for exposure to this community, because I mean, I was jeopardizing my license, my mental health, my physical health, and potentially it could have led to even more complications with my child, because I had a preterm child just because of a lot of the stress that happened around this work environment that I was in. So, you know, I think that savings rate and all that kind of stuff, they're really, really good goals. But ultimately, like the whole tenet of the movement is just like understanding what's possible for you and how you can use where you are financially in order to live the life that you really aspire to.
Yeah. Actually, that reminds me of the conversation Diana and I had was, you know, again, going back to some people who have no income, maybe they're disabled and they might be on disability. And it's sort of like, it's really powerful to sort of like, okay, for those who can have that perspective of, I am in a place right now anyway, where I can't make money, but I have this time to spend with family, to, you know, read what I want, to engage in projects, to do research and learn. It's sort of like, right. I mean, the sort of being on the treadmill, particularly when the treadmill is toxic, and I'm grateful I really haven't been in that kind of a situation, but I know many people who have, and it can really detract from and take away your quality of life. And I'm glad you were able to make that transition, particularly as you had a new child coming along. And I brought up the children because, you know, children are like, mommy, I want, but it sounds like you had really done your living simply in order to pay off the debt. And then you were in that sort of more free space by the time they came along so that you could both move to a better place for them and you and change your lifestyle so you could spend more time with them. How wonderful is that? Congratulations.
Thank you.
Very cool. So the next one is invest. And so, you know, saving is like just, you know, keeping more of the cash, right? So invest is where do we put it? So, Nasima, are you willing to share and give us some ideas on how you approach the investing?
Yeah, and actually, this is interesting because when I was paying off my debt, I kind of took the approach of not investing and like really going hard and paying down my debt, which is a big mistake. It actually cost me a lot of money. I actually had to pay the IRS $30,000 instead of having money in my account. And it also, and then I actually went back and did the math. Actually, Travis did the math for me. And Travis is at the Student Loan Planner. He was one of the speakers at the Economy Conference last year. And he told me that if I would have invested during the time I was paying off debt, I could have, well, basically what I lost was over $80,000. So not only did I have to pay the IRS, then I had to, I lost $80,000 along the way. But investing is super important. And I think that this is something that we overcomplicate. I know I overcomplicated it and I was afraid of investing because when I was in my 20s, I thought investing was buying real estate. And during the housing crash, I invested in real estate and had to file bankruptcy and all this kind of stuff as a result of it. So I overcomplicated investing in my head. And I think Diana highlighted a super important book that I encourage everybody to read. It's called The Simple Path to Wealth by J.L. Collins. And it was just like, that was the first time I was like, oh, it really doesn't have to be that hard. And so a lot of the people in the FIRE movement, you'll hear say, you know, they just invest simply in low-cost index funds. They set it and forget it. And that approach has worked really well for me. The thing that I like to optimize is I have a 403B because I work for a hospital, which is considered a government entity. And along with a 403B, I have a 457, which I can contribute the same amount of money to. So like just maximizing those things have accelerated my net worth just over these last few years, more than I could have ever done, just trying to like play in the stock market any kind of way. And it's simple, set it and forget it. I don't think about it. It's just straightforward, but it's something that like that compound interest is something that you don't understand the power of it until you see it working for you. Right. So I love investing.
Yeah. Particularly in the market. I am index S&P index all the way. I've been in it since I had my first job and you know, it's done just fine by me, you know, low cost and just stay in when it goes down, you know, if you're young enough to do that. What about you, Diana? What strategy do you use for investing?
So investing always really intimidated me. Like when I was getting out of debt, that was really fun because it was so straightforward, just throw money until it's gone, right? But then when you're investing, you have to choose like, what vehicle am I going to use for investing? What funds am I going to invest in? Do I have to do rebalancing every year, right? And if you think about the financial services industry, they make it sound so complicated because it benefits them for us to think that we can't do it on our own. So that's another reason why I really like the FIRE movement is that it really advocates for do-it-yourself investing and really tries to help simplify it because that, you know, you're going to pay a lot in fees if you use financial planners and that kind of thing, which some people should be using financial planners or at least robo advisors, right? There's a lot of like fintech companies out there that for a very much lower fee or percentage of your assets, you know, they'll do the rebalancing and automated investing for you. But I really followed the book, The Simple Path to Wealth, that Nasima mentioned, because it really was the simplest thing that I could find. And my strategy has been passive investing in low fee total market index funds, just like that's recommended in the book. And I prioritize the tax advantage retirement vehicles. So, you know, a lot of people are familiar with a 401k or a Roth IRA. An HSA is another tax advantaged account that's talked a lot within the FIRE movement. These are places that there are tax advantages if you put your money in, but there's also federal limits on how much money you can put in. So I find that for most people, unless you're making a really, really high income, the goal of fully funding those vehicles is probably where you just need to spend most of your efforts, right? You don't have to worry about a lot of the other things if you are just focused on, you know, I'm meeting my employer match, I'm putting money into my Roth IRA, you know, and just working on increasing how much money you're putting in there. And then the funds that are available to you within those buckets, you should have an S&P 500 type fund available to you. And you can keep it as simple as that. That's really what I've done.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Those are the key tools. And you mentioned HSA, that's a health savings account.
Yep.
Some people are still using flexible spending accounts. Same idea. You're putting money away pre-tax that you can use for health or children's expenses and things like that. But yeah, those tools are just, they're golden. And you know, I know jobs change and such, but these are the first questions I ask if I get an offer, you know, it's sort of like, and tell me about the benefits, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah. Yeah. Really important stuff. The other thing I wanted to point out was, yeah, so a lot of people are like, there's still a lot of people who are like, they're not even putting in enough for the match. And so my phrase is, so you don't want to take the full salary that they're giving you, because essentially you're turning down money by, mm-hmm. You know, and that's the thing, to say, well, I just can't figure out my budget on how to, you know, they can't find the money. And it's like, let's work on your budget, right? So it's a circular process. You got to go back to the plan. You got to have a plan. Because if you're turning down money, which is keeping you from getting more money, that's a circle you don't want to be in. So once they get over that hurdle, it's like, okay, great. You're contributing that minimum 5% in order to get, and I'm just making that number up, in order to get your employer's match. Good on you. But that 5% may not be the IRS maximum, which this year is $19,500. So no, not everybody can, you know, give up that much of their salary, and it's not really giving it up, but they can't save, they can't go without that much of their salary coming through. But that's the goal that you really want to reach for, is do the IRS max, you know, because again, we've lost mm-hmm. like, you know, those pensions and some of the other sort of safety nets that our parents had when they were going into retirement. All right, and I think we've talked a little about reduced spending. Actually, you've given some examples, but talk about, maybe each of you tell us about one thing that was really hard to give up and how you adjusted to that. If there was one.
Yeah, I think what's touted a lot in the FIRE movement is this sense of frugality. And I like to say that I like to take the like Marie Kondo approach. Like, I spend money on things that spark joy to me. And to me, my car really sparks joy. But, you know, I had a little bit of, and I have a Tesla. So let's just put that out there. I like grappled with this because of what I felt like other people's opinion of me would be, just because I do have a public platform. But for me, it was something that really, really sparked joy and something that I wasn't really ready to part with, or something that I don't think I should have to give up. I like really nice things, and I feel like I spend unapologetically on those really nice things that bring joy to my life. And everything else, like, I don't really care about, so I don't spend money on. But, you know, and nobody has ever gave me the any kind of backlash publicly about it. But it was just my whole thing that I was grappling with in my head. Like, what would people think? But ultimately, how it made me feel was most important.
Yeah. Good for you. What about
you? And I think that the focus on frugality in the FIRE movement is kind of similar to when we talked about these like white tech guys making six figures, right? It's the most popular voices that's the way that they live. And so it kind of paints this picture that that's the way that everybody lives. But I really look at personal finances, it's very personal. Each person has a unique set of circumstances, preferences, and skills that help them build, chart their own path, essentially. I personally am one that I like frugality. I think that there's a lot more benefits to being frugal and to being a minimalist than just saving money. Like when I gave the example of, you know, the clothing exchange or cooking my own food, I get a lot of satisfaction out of that. If I didn't, well, then maybe I'd make different choices. You know, I paid $6,000 cash for my car because I don't care about my car. I don't want a Tesla. It's not like I don't have a Tesla because I'm just trying to save money and I'm depriving myself. I actually prefer not to have that car, right? And so I think that's the key, is to know, you know, where you stand on that and what it is that you value so that you can spend money on the things that you really value and then cut back in other areas. You know, I'm sure that I spend money on things that Nasima doesn't spend money on because she doesn't value it, right? Everybody's different. I think the other reason why frugality is really popular in the FIRE movement is that, first of all, it's usually the easiest thing you can do to affect change. So it can be challenging to increase your income. But when it comes to expenses, you know, you have a little bit more agency, especially at the beginning in the short term, to slash expenses. It's also often referred to as a double whammy when you're reducing expenses, because not only do you now have more money to put towards your saving and investing, but also the lifestyle you have to fund is less. So you're more likely to reach financial independence sooner, the less money that you actually need to fund that lifestyle. So I find a lot of benefits in frugality, but I don't believe that it should feel like deprivation. And if it does feel like deprivation, I think you've simply gone too far.
Right, right, right. And that's hard to maintain if you're really feeling like you've given up too much of your life. If this is not an enjoyable life anymore, then that's probably not going to be sustainable. So
correct.
Well, ladies, thank you. This has been really wonderful. I want to end with an opening to let's remind people of the conference, when it is, where it is. And also, I don't think we said what is the price tag and if something should happen with a surge. Tell us about that.
Sure. So the Economy Conference, you can check it out at economyconference.com. It is this November at the University of Cincinnati. The cost of tickets, it's $199 a ticket. And our COVID plan, if we should not be able to meet in person, because we are expecting 700 attendees, if we aren't able to meet in that large of a group, I already have a backup date for March 2022. It's March 19th and 20th, 2022. And I'm making that call by September 1st. So I'm encouraging people, because tickets are going quickly. If you're interested in coming, grab your ticket, but don't book your flight or accommodations until after September 1st when I make that announcement, so we can make sure that it's actually happening in November and it's not being pushed to March.
So Diana, you and I have talked about this, but I didn't, is there a code, perhaps a discount code that they could say, well, I learned about you from Vanessa's Money Hour.
Yes. So you can, we can make it up right now. 10% discount, 10% discount for, and what do we want the code to be?
Let's make the code V money sign H-O-U-R. Is that too complicated?
No, all caps. V money side hour, all caps. Yep, for a 10% discount.
There you go. There you go. Love it. Love it. Love it. And I'll put that out there too as I repost this. Good. I am so excited about the conference. I'm excited about this. I'm so appreciative of the two of you for sharing what I know. These are, that's the thing. You know, a lot of people don't like talking about money. Clearly we do. Yes. We got to find our people. But you know, I appreciate it because it's not always comfortable, but the learning is powerful when we really share with each other. So thank you all. Any final comments? Nasima, let me open up to you.
I just want to say that I look forward to seeing everyone at the Economy Conference. I think, like what I was telling you about your network is your net worth. Like, I really feel like attending events like this is powerful, not just to hear the speakers, but to interact with the other participants in the conference, the other people who, the attendees. I feel like also adds like a whole nother level of value. And so don't sleep on these conferences. They are places where you can really get a lot of inspiration, long-term friendships, and people that can really help you turn your life around.
I would second that. I look at the people in my life today, my best friends today are all people that I met at events like this. It's pretty incredible. One of my favorite quotes is, if you look at your inner circle and you're not inspired, then you don't have a circle, you have a cage. So out to the economy conference and find your people.
Find your people, find your circle. Ladies, thank you so much. Really, really great to see you. And I look forward to seeing you IRL in real life in November.
Absolutely. Thanks again.
Take care. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Vanessa's Money Hour on Germantown Community Radio, WRLGLP at 92.9 FM in Northwest Philadelphia. Go out and have a great day.